Nice to see everyone here this morning. Starting to feel a little bit more like spring, although it was chilly, a little chilly overnight. But we're looking forward to a nice sunny day today. And we have a message for you today. As Dave mentioned, we'll be touching a little bit on Passover, but it's only in the sense of the greater picture. And I have some pictures up here on the first slide. Jesus, if you think about it, he wasn't really too big on ceremonies. And aside from baptism, which he didn't even do that himself, it wasn't something that he did. It was something John the Baptist did. It was a tradition and a ceremony that was carried over into the New Testament church. But the main practice, or something that he did pass on, and there was a real emphasis on it, and this occurred at the Passover meal, or what we commonly refer to as the Last Supper. And it's been passed down to us through time, and we commonly call it communion, or we call it Eucharist. Now, Eucharist just means thanks or thanksgiving, but the two terms are certainly used interchangeably. And as part of today's service, we will, at the end, partake of the symbols of the bread and the wine. And having just gone through a couple of weeks ago the events leading up to the death and the resurrection of Jesus, we're annually reminded about how Jesus is the fulfillment of all of the prophecies about the coming Messiah. And indeed, Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, I'll get it going here. He wrote something and he said, I just want to emphasize the one verse, "For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed." And we see that. We see that throughout the ministry of Jesus, that there are numerous parallels, numerous things that he relates to through the prophecies that were given in the past and in the Old Testament. Now, there is also some evidence that the New Testament church, the early, very, very early church in the first century, observed something like the Passover meal and potentially also the festival that accompanied with it. So, starting tomorrow night, the Jewish community will be celebrating something called Passover. It's generally considered to be a two-day feast or festival, but it's attached to something that occurs over a period of a week, which in the Bible is referred to as the Festival of Unleavened Bread. Now, I really don't want to get into too much detail about that, but there was this observance, apparently, in the very, very early New Testament church, and it was something like the Passover meal. Yet, it was done with the understanding, clearly with the understanding, that Jesus was the fulfillment. The only vestige that we have today of this is communion, the bread and the wine service that we occasionally do. And what I'd like to do this morning is I'd just like to take a closer look at this and look at what the Passover was like a little bit, not in excruciating detail, because that would take a long time, but how our modern practice of what we do, partaking of the symbols of the bread and the wine, how it relates to what was of old and what we do now. So, I keep pressing the wrong button. We'll get there. So, the Last Supper. So, the communion service, I can't really see it this way. The communion service has its roots in the Last Supper. So, I don't know. You can try. Oh, what a guy. Okay, that works a lot better. So this way I don't have to keep turning around and looking over my shoulder. So the communion service has its roots in the Last Supper. The symbols of the bread and wine trace all the way back to the Exodus and the Passover meal in Judeo-Christian tradition. And bread and wine are also a fixture and very much part of the Passover meal. So tomorrow begins, again, the two-day Seder. In modern times, the Jewish community, sometimes they have a meal on the first night that's just with family, and then on the second night, they might have a second meal that that comes with friends. But the word Seder just means a service, and it's something that is very solemn to that community of people. It's something that goes all the way back in time to the Exodus. There is a remembrance. There is a reading of vast quantities of scriptures, including the Psalms, including the Exodus account that they go through. Now, communion or Eucharist practices in the early church were a little bit different than what we have now. We'll talk about that. And then we'll talk a little bit about how this is all interconnected. So whether the Last Supper, the so-called Last Supper, was a traditional Passover or Seder meal is, believe it or not, hotly debated. People never argue about stuff, right? So, and, you know, I read quite a few articles on the topic in preparation for talking this morning. But afterwards, I felt positively schizophrenic. Did they eat lamb at the Last Supper? Did they eat the meal on the day, the same day as the Jews ate the Passover, which really seems highly unlikely? And many of these articles seemed to have a little bit of an agenda. They were trying to say something in particular or prove one thing or another thing. But my conclusion about all of this is it really doesn't matter. You know, potato, potato. There was a foot-washing ceremony that Jesus performed at the Last Supper, but that's really not part of the Passover tradition. Now, in Jesus' time, when people entered a house, there would be a foot-washing because typically they wore sandals and their feet was dusty. But that was, you know, the entry into the house. That wasn't really part of the meal per se. So whether or not it was a Passover meal, strictly speaking, you know, I don't know. But what happened that night was extremely important, and it forms the basis for our tradition and what we do today. I had a mentor many, many years ago who was very fond of saying, don't major in the minors, right? Don't get so bogged down in all of the details. You know, and we'll talk a little bit today about some of the details, but the reason for doing that is so that we can see the bigger picture, right? Not to get that bogged down in those details. So I think we can safely say that Jesus was doing something at this Last Supper meal that was both old and new at the same time. Paul wrote some instructions about all of this in his first letter to the Corinthians. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, did I go backward instead of forward? Yes, I did. Okay. All right, so more about the first century Passover meal. The focus was on the Exodus. It was recalling the story in depth. The Passover Seder is a retelling, often referred to as a Haggadah, of what God did for Israel when he brought them out of Egypt. The story is told through a meal where each of the foods and the order in which they are eaten symbolizes various aspects of what happened. Now, these traditions were written down later in something called the Mishnah. So that didn't occur to the third century. And not as much is known about exactly what took place in the first century prior to the destruction of the temple. A lot of it was probably oral tradition that was handed down over the centuries. And then after the temple was destroyed, it was kind of formalized into a ceremony, and that's what the Jewish community typically follows today. So let's set the scene and use the story as it's told in Luke, the 22nd chapter. Then came the day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. So it was ordained to happen on a specific day. Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and make preparations for us to eat the Passover." And they asked him, "Where do you want us to prepare for it?" He replied, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you." He gets very specific here, right? "Follow him to the house that he enters and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover?'" So here Jesus himself refers to it as a Passover. "Where I may eat the Passover with my disciples. He will show you a large upstairs room, all furnished. Make preparations there." So they left, and they found things just as Jesus told them. So they prepared the Passover. So, you know, again, not getting too much into unnecessary details here, I just want to mention one little aside, okay, a little bit out of the context of the sermon, because it's interesting. When it talks here about a man carrying a jar of water, that would have been very unusual. That probably would have caught the disciples' notice, because typically in the first century, and please don't anybody get mad at me, women typically were the ones who went to go draw the water and bring it to the house for use, okay? So this man was probably an Essene. Now, the Essenes were a sect that was actually pretty robust in the time of Jesus, and they had certain different beliefs that were a bit out of the mainstream with the Jews. And typically, they had their own calendar, right? And they counted the dates and the festivals and when they were supposed to occur. They calculated all of that differently than the rest of the Jewish nation. So again, I don't want to get too bogged down, but it's just interesting to notice sometimes some of the details that are put in and that we can have. So the disciples, I'm sure, did not seem puzzled by any of this. Jesus told them, you know, go and prepare this particular place. So they did. And then when they get there, the hour had come. Further in Luke 22, Jesus and his apostles reclined at the table. Now, you may remember, I'll put it up again later, but on the first slide, there was a picture of them, you know, and the table was usually low, maybe about 18 inches off the ground. And when it says that they were reclining, you may have noticed on that picture that they were sort of, you know, kind of reclining and laying on their side, and that was fairly typical. And Jesus said to them, "I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you again, I will not eat it again until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom of God." So when the disciples made the preparations, they may have been a little bit puzzled. And then when they got there, and Jesus is talking about the Passover meal, they may still have been a little bit puzzled because this was the day before the Passover lambs would be slaughtered and sacrificed at the temple and before the nation as a whole, except for the Essenes, of course, would be having their Passover meal. Maybe that night they were expecting just to have a meal and then to have the Passover again in that same room the following night. We don't know, you know. But sometimes the disciples would be a little puzzled by what Jesus would say, but they didn't ask questions, right? You know, they would just, okay, kind of go with it, roll with it a little bit. But the symbolism and Jesus' own statement about eating a Passover at that point in time, maybe they realized that something new was going to happen, that somehow this was going to be a little bit different. And none of the symbolism that would take place that night would be lost on the disciples. You know, if we go through these other verses, it talks about what Jesus did that night. He said, after taking the cup, he gave thanks and said, take this and divide it among you. For I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes. And he took bread and gave thanks and broke it, gave it to them saying, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup. And again, this was after the supper. We'll talk a little bit about that. This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. He said that this was something to be done in remembrance of him. So just take note of that, and we'll come back to that. Okay, so first century Passover or Seder meal, some of the key elements of that would have been bitter herbs, vegetables, usually celery or parsley, lamb, of course, unleavened bread, not one cup of wine, but four ritual cups of wine, prayers and blessings and giving of thanks, and numerous readings, including, at the end of the Passover meal, some excerpts from the Psalms would be sung. Okay? I just made a reference here to where, you know, the article that I found on the internet that kind of takes you through some of this. Now, later on, after the temple was destroyed, 70 AD, there was no place for the lambs to be slaughtered, right, to be ritually sacrificed. So what happened now, before the temple was destroyed, was mostly oral tradition, and then afterwards it was formalized in the 3rd century, and those practices survive until today. Wrong one. Okay. So there was a very specific order of events, the numerous prayers, the retelling of the Passover story, lots of different passages of Scripture. One of the interesting elements of the Passover meal was that there would be these four questions that would be asked. And the four questions, I don't want to take the time to go through all of them, but it would center around the idea of why the night was different. So the idea was usually the youngest person there would ask the first question, and then the paterfamilias, or the head of the family, whoever was the head of the family, would answer the question. And then the second question, and the third question, and the fourth question. The second question, on all other nights, we eat chametz, leavened foods, and matzah tonight. Why on this night do we only eat matzah? You know, so this is the unleavened bread tradition. There were also three pieces of matzah. The Seder leader would usually take the second piece and wrap it, and it would remain hidden in some way. He might take it out of the room, or it might be wrapped and remain on the table. And some people speculate that this second piece of bread foreshadows Jesus' body being hidden in the earth. So, you know, now we see some of the parallels. There were four cups of ritual wine that were taken, two during the meal and then two after the meal. The first two cups, the cup of sanctification, recalls bringing Israel out from under the burden of the Egyptians. The second, the judgment or deliverance, refers to them being delivered from their bondage. Now, the third cup and the fourth cup, which come after the meal, the cup of redemption is about God redeeming Israel with an outstretched arm. And then the fourth cup is when Israel becomes the people of God, and God says that he will be with them. Now, it's quite possible that the cup of redemption is where Jesus said to the disciples, "This cup is poured out for you in the new covenant of my blood." And after everyone is finished eating the meal itself, then that second of the three pieces of matzah, the one that was hidden previously, is brought out and it's shared with everyone to eat. And this is possibly the piece of matzah that Jesus said represented his body broken for all of us. Now, again, none of us were there. None of us know exactly what happened that night, but there are certainly a lot of parallels. And the whole thing with the bread and the wine would not have at all seemed strange to the disciples, and goes all the way back to the Exodus. After taking the cup, back to Luke 22, he gave thanks and said, "Take this and divide it among you." And he took the bread, verse 19, and broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." So, regardless of whether it was exactly a Passover Seder, this aspect is new. This aspect is different. Jesus says, "You will do this now, henceforth, going forward, in remembrance of me." And what is it that we're remembering? Well, we're remembering Jesus' sacrificial death. We're remembering that we as believers have a participation in the Great Commission of bringing the gospel message to the entire world, and the redemption that we get and experience through the new covenant. That both in the Exodus and now in Jesus, that God showed up in a very direct way. And now, in this time, or in Jesus' time, even in person, to do something that we could never do for ourselves. The Israelites couldn't free themselves from Egypt. We could not free ourselves from sin. The Passover, if you will, recalls how God saved a nation. The Last Supper, if you will, memorializes that Jesus saved all of us. He saved the world. And that continues to this day. And it's an ongoing thing. It was special, the Last Supper. It was something that Jesus himself instituted. And many, if not all, of the different elements that we talked about have their roots in the Passover. So Jesus, you see, is like a bridge, if I can use that analogy. He bridges what happened in the Old Covenant to what is now the New Covenant. He bridges that relationship. Then it was a nation being saved. Now he saves all of us, past, present, and future. And that Last Supper is the pivot point, is the bridge between these two different things. All of the sacrifices, all of the practices of the past are now encapsulated into one memorial in remembrance of Jesus. Now, we mentioned earlier about Paul giving some instructions about communion. And in this chapter, chapter 11, in that letter to the Corinthians, Paul gets a little terse here. You know, he says, in the following directives, I have no praise for you, for your meetings. They do more harm than good. In the first place, I hear that when you come together as a church, there are divisions among you. And to some extent, I believe it. So then, when you come together, it is not the Lord's supper you eat. For when you are eating, some of you go ahead with your own private suppers, and as a result, one person remains hungry, another one gets drunk. Don't you have homes to go and eat in? Or do you despise the church of God by humiliating those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you? Certainly not in this matter. What on earth is going on here? What is Paul talking about? Well, as Jesus, after the death, his death and resurrection, and as the church started growing in Asia Minor, there was a practice of something called the agape meal. So this is something that you may or may not have heard before. What would happen, the form of the worship service was that the church would get together. They would have a meal, a full meal, right? Then there would be some preaching or teaching. And in between those two things, they would have the symbolic bread and wine. So the Oxford Dictionary of Christian Church, the term agape, or agape, if you will, seems to have been used in the early church in close relation to the Eucharist. Oxford Companion to the Bible, the Love Feast is the common meal with which Christians first followed Christ's command at the Last Supper to do this in remembrance of me. Protestant International Standard Bible, in the opinion of a great majority of scholars, well, there's a small miracle when a great majority of the scholars agree on something. The agape, or agape, was a meal at which not only bread and wine, but all kinds of viands, I had to look that one up too, guys, foods were used. A meal which had the double purpose of satisfying hunger and thirst and giving expression to the sense of Christian brotherhood. At the end of the feast, bread and wine were taken according to the Lord's command, and after thanksgiving to God, were eaten and drunk in remembrance of Christ and as a special means of communion with the Lord himself and through him with one another. So, you know, you have the Passover pre-destruction of the temple. Then you have after the temple that they couldn't do the ritual sacrifice of the lambs, and things kind of changed a little bit. In the Christian community, you have this love feast, as they called it, that included the Lord's Supper as well. The love feast was the ancestor of the bread and wine service that we call communion or Eucharist. There is general agreement that from the mid-third century, the agape and Eucharist go their separate ways. So eventually, the practice of the potluck meal, followed by the commemoration and the repeating of the Last Supper, it stops. And then just as part of the service, as part of a worship service, there would be, in the Catholic tradition, it's done at every service where there is communion, and in other denominations, like as we do it here, we do it occasionally, you know, which to me makes it a little bit special. So I enjoy actually that particular aspect of it. Jumping a little bit forward in time, the practice continued for a couple of centuries, I guess. And then there was something called the Council of Nicaea that happened, I think that was in the 3rd century. And within a century after Constantine's conversion, this love feast, this agape meal, gone, disappears from the scene. At the Council of Nicaea, some rules around Eucharist, but nothing dictating an exact practice, at least that I could find in my research. So going on in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul says, "For I received from the Lord which I also passed on to you." You might recall that Paul says that he personally, as someone out of time, spent time with Jesus and was personally taught by Jesus. So this was apparently the Eucharist, communion, was apparently even something that Jesus, after his resurrection, emphasized to Paul. And he goes on to say, you know, and he rehearses it, and it's almost exactly word for word what's in Luke 22. When he had given thanks, he broke it. He said, "This is my body, which is given for you." And in the same way, after supper, again, after supper, he took the cup, "New covenant of my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." Then Paul adds, "For whenever you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." And what is it that we are proclaiming? We are proclaiming the gospel message. We are proclaiming the love of God. We are proclaiming what John wrote in the beginning of his gospel, that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son to us that we might live. Going on in this chapter, and I took this translation from the Message, which is somewhat of a paraphrase, but I kind of like the way that he put it. What you must solemnly realize is that every time you eat this bread and every time you drink this cup, you reenact in your words and in your actions the death of the Master. You will be drawn back to this meal again and again until the Master returns. You must never let familiarity breed contempt. So, you know, Paul was dressing them down. let's be frank. And what he's saying here is definitely sobering. But I don't think Paul was trying to instill fear. We simply need to remember, because this word keeps coming back again. In the Passover tradition, they're remembering the Exodus. They're remembering what God had done. In the Last Supper tradition, we're remembering Jesus. We're remembering all that he preached during his lifetime. We're remembering that he suffered in a way that's almost incomprehensible. Just remember why you are coming to the table to partake. And even if you have mixed emotions, right? I submit to you, it's possible to be happy and sad at the same time. Maybe some of you have older children like Laura and I do, you know, and you send them off to school and, you know, you kind of have mixed emotions, right? You know, because you're happy about what the future holds, you know, but you're sad a little bit too at the same time. And with partaking of the symbols, you might feel a bit lacking at some moments, but you can always come back to the fact that Jesus always forgave. He was always there for you. And the most important aspect of all of this is to participate in the remembrance of all God has done through Jesus. So, anyone who eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Master irreverently is like part of the crowd that jeered and spit on him at his death. Is that the kind of remembrance you want to be part of? Examine your motives, test your heart, come to this meal in holy awe. So, as you partake of the bread and the wine symbols, as we move forward into that, as you're doing that, perhaps just say to yourself, I remember.